Jinkies!
I don't like you.
Captain, my captain.
No, that's where? Sammy Davis Jr. That's not Droopy, no. That's Sammy Davis.
No,
Captain. I sing the body. Right. I sing the
I
song
sing
of
the
myself,
body electric.
Man.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I, man.
Hey, I've never tried it, but saying the word yawp as Droopy Dog is very happy.
Yawp. A little barbaric yawp.
It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, joined as always by Philip Michaels and David J. Lohr. Hi, guys.
Don't mind me. I'm just auditing. I was told this was 18th century Portuguese literature.
Oh, the indignity of mozzarella droppings.
it's pizza, Higgins. This is Season 5, Episode 8, Murder 101, in which Magnum teaches a class about private investigation and drags all of his students along on a case. It feels to me, friends, a little bit like a pilot for a different Magnum PI show. I could totally see a show that is the adventures of the Magnum gang in their mystery machine van.
Oh, funny you should mention that. Jason, I don't know how big a Scooby-Doo fan you were.
Huge, which is depressing now
huge.
because that's my definitive don't watch those episodes now as an adult because you realize they're all just crap.
Oh, they're terrible.
But I watched all of them.
Since you're about the same age as me, you surely remember when Scooby-Doo did the thing where they had celebrity guest stars like Sonny
and
Cher.
The new Scooby-Doo movies.
The Harlem Globetrotters. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Addams Family.
Laurel and Hardy. Don Knotts.
Yeah.
Cass Elliot.
Yeah, Cass Elliot is going to help you solve crimes. Yeah.
Jerry Reed.
Yeah.
And
that's how I know who Jerry Reed is because of Scooby-Doo. I knew nothing more about him other than that he was on Scooby-Doo. Oh.
So I have this feeling that whoever the writer of this episode, Rogers Turrentine, was watching a Scooby-Doo episode where it's Scooby-Doo meets up with Tim Conway. And he says, hey, what if Magnum had met up with a crazy bunch of kids who were into solving crimes?
Uh-huh.
And so it,
I think it would go a little something like this. And he put a piece of paper in a typewriter.
This is a live action Scooby-Doo where Tom Selleck is the guest star, in essence.
Yeah.
Because you have your Shaggy, you have your Fred, you have your Velma, you have your Daphne, you have other people who don't fit in well with this metaphor.
Right.
So
you have a spare Daphne.
A spare Daphne.
Yeah.
And you have an older Fred.
Let's pretend that the older guy is Scrappy Doo.
Okay.
So, you know, it works, I tells you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
Thomas could be Scooby.
I honestly, they brought back Luther Gillis like 90 times. And I like Luther Gillis, but I look at this and I think they should have done like 10 episodes of Thomas's PI class.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm very sad that we never saw any of the murder solvers again.
Because the pitch is really like Magnum is going to drag these people around, but they actually are all quirky and they help him in various ways to solve his case.
Help him and hamper him.
And hamper him. And,
you know, by this point in five seasons in, he's very friendly with Higgins. You know, the antagonism isn't quite the same. And so here you have him trying to work at this college, and you have Alan Fudge as the, what is he, the dean?
Called Mr. Gaylord, but he's basically the dean from every college movie ever.
Yeah, he is the uptight dean.
Yeah.
Take that, and of course, you uptight dean.
Yeah.
You know, Alan Fudge is very much the TV version of William Atherton.
Yep.
You know, in the 70s and 80s, he's that asshole. And, you know, and so he's great in this. I would have loved an episode where Higgins shows up and faces off with him going, no, I'm the one who beats him down. No, I want to beat him down. No, I'm the one who beats him down. Oh, my God.
David, did you enjoy watching that girl and that asshole back to back in the 70s as much as I did?
I think that's, he's that asshole was the name of that show. Okay, so now
no, it was That's My Asshole.
We need
that's
to talk.
A whole different
oh
show.
My god, that's no, that was a cable that, show, David. Cable.
Yeah, that's My Asshole is a public access commercial about a treatment.
Yeah,
and frankly, I was 2 disappointed with the results.
So
oh dear.
I normally would recap the episode at this point. However, I watched this episode today. I was feeling a little under the weather, but I got good news. I got someone to sub in for me, and that's why we're going to go to a letter right here at the top. A letter from a listener. Okay. This is a letter from listener Brian, who writes in, "I love the show, and listening to it has brought back memories of the intense Magnum fandom my brother Scott and I shared in the mid-80s. Besides the NFL, the Olympics, and the nightly news, we grew up in a pretty strictly PBS house, so Magnum PI was one of my early forays into slightly more grown-up fare, which we watched in syndication and in secret on our local NBC affiliate in Anchorage, Alaska. I don't remember exactly how we started, but on March 9th, 1987, when I was 12, Don't Eat the Snow in Hawaii Part 1 aired on KTUU Channel 2, and my brother and I began taking notes on the plot of each episode. They begin auspiciously, possibly the first episode. In the beginning, Magnum has to successfully steal the Ferrari to prove that the Robin's Nest is not impenetrable and that Higgins is not capable of guarding it. Higgins almost caught him, but Magnum discovered that the car alarm was deactivated by punching in Robin's personal telephone number."
Jason, someone's coming for your job.
Yo, this is so good. My verdict after 7 pages of notes covering part 1 and 2, this one was good. At a certain point, our slightly older next door neighbor who worked for the station gave us a 3-page photocopied list of episodes and air titles titled Magnum PI, Syndication, Sequence, Revised, Recommended, Air Order, which listed the 127 episodes of seasons 1 through 6 that the affiliate aired. This helped greatly as we identified and kept track of the episodes we were watching. Of those 127 episodes, I counted 93 in this 3-ring binder complete with title page made in print shop, one or two of which were new season 7 episodes airing on KTVA, our local CBS affiliate. Brian sent us a picture. He still has the binder. It does have a lovely Magnum PI print shop label in it.
It's beautiful.
It is amazing.
It is beautiful.
At some point,
it took me back.
I made a list of characters, listing name, occupation, and age, though I listed Thomas Sullivan, Magnum, Theodore Calvin, and Orville Rick Wright as all 30-ish, so no help with the great Magnum age controversy. Thank you.
No, none at all.
Occasionally, we jot notes in the margins, like Rule 168, if chased, be in a fast car. P.S. There can always be a faster one. We also occasionally noted when something else aired instead, usually Star Search with Ed McMahon. Or when we couldn't watch, like Colorado Washington Vacation, or the extremely glasnosty at USSR USA wrestling meet, which meant we missed the airing of Blood and Honor. Since we weren't really supposed to be watching commercial television, there's also the occasional note in all caps, "Mom came in," along with a requisite gap in the plot summary. "Thanks for reminding me of why the show was so great and occasionally terrible, and anytime you need an episode synopsis of a show from seasons 1 to 6, I'm happy to provide a blow-by-blow of a Magnum episode through the eyes of a 12-year-old who had definitely never been to Hawaii." And that brings us to the synopsis of Murder 101.
Oh, yes.
Which aired in syndication on August 14th, 1987. Aired on CBS, of course, in 1984. And these are just the words of Brian. And you guys can stop me or you can just let me go. Here it is. At an airport. A man is going to the airport.
Story checks out so far.
He gets out of the car, says goodbye to a woman, and sees a man chasing him. He runs into the ticket agent. The lady sees the man's ticket on the floor of the car. The man gets a rental car and leaves.
Now, before you go on.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I have in my notes right here, before he even gets to the rental counter, don't go to the men's room.
Yeah, oh. Well, he knows, man.
He's being chased.
Yeah.
Don't go to the men's
room. Oh, yeah, he'd be dead if he went in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But he doesn't, therefore our plot continues. It's true.
Fans of Lost will note that he went to Oceanic Rent-A-Car.
Also, in a grim note, as noted on Magnum-Mania.com, the official Bible of the Magnum podcast, the flight, that when she rushes in to try and stop her fiancé from flying away without his ticket, because he can't do that because he doesn't have a ticket, the plane is leaving, and we see a shot of the plane leaving, and it's the plane that blew up in the Lockerbie bombing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's the plane, the very plane that later was blown up in a terrorist bombing. Because they all have little cute names on the nose of the planes, and that's the one that was exploded in the Lockerbie bombing.
Well, that has really brought us down.
Kind of a downer, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Brian's synopsis from the 80s. Mag, short for Magnum, is teaching a private investigating 101 class. He sends a bowl around the class, and they put their problems in it. It sounds a little like it's a like therapy session going on here.
No, that's good.
He chose the lady who was at the airport. They went to the bar where a friend of the lady saw the man who was at the airport. Mag got punched up in the bathroom. Mag and the class went to the motel and bought all the trash. They found a laundry slip, and then the guy came in and canceled the class.
See, I watched this episode less than 24 hours ago, and this is the stuff of madness, what he's describing here.
I feel so much better about my notes.
And yet madness. Okay.
All right, well, you know, have at it. I covered a lot there. Magnum needs eight students in his class, and he only gets six. And he basically pays Rick and TC to take the class. But then this one guy is going to drop out of the class, and the mean old dean is going to cancel the class. The class is very excited because they want him to solve their cases. They pick the lady who is at the airport out of the bowl. That is entirely true.
And of course, you know, we have the Chekhov's opening sequence so that we figure out which class member is
of course, because she's the one who's got the really juicy crime to solve.
We know it's not going to be Merle and his dumb pickup truck.
Yeah, no, that's in the next episode.
Wouldn't that have been a great twist, though?
At the end of the episode, she says, "But Magnum, my fiance is missing." What? Dun 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 dun. Also, they went to a bar. There is an extended scene where Magnum says, "Okay, we're all going to pretend to come in pairs." And he goes and sits at the bar, and there's nobody there, and nobody is in that time of day. And then suddenly a series of couples enter the bar to sit in various places. And Magnum says, "I'll take care of the beer. I'll buy your beer for you," which leads to a local who is credited as Chug-a-Lug Man in the credits.
Yes.
Just keeps drinking beers since Magnum is buying. And then later we see him in the bathroom.
An accurate description.
Yeah.
And it's a nice gag because he just stands there, drinks the beer down completely, picks up the next one, drinks it completely. And then the payoff of, you know, Magnum gets punched up in the bathroom.
Yep.
Everyone comes in the bathroom, breaks it up. And then the guy walks in and goes, "Hey, man,
thanks for the beer."
And goes right in the stall.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, nice the payoff. Magnum is rescued from being beat up by his class, which is a really nice Magnum being laid extra low, right? That his class and the guys don't want to go into the bathroom. And then the ladies are like, "Well, we're going to go save Magnum." And then the guys are like, no, you can't go into the bathroom." And then they all go into the bathroom and save Magnum. And the two guys who are beating him up run out. It's very funny, actually. I loved it.
Yeah. It's a great sequence.
Mag got punched up in the bathroom, as the synopsis says. So they do go to the motel, where, because it turns out off camera, and this is one of those little shorthand things that kind of bugged me, the lady who was at the airport says, "Oh, I talked to a waitress who said that he saw a hotel room key and knows the room number that he was staying in," which is like, okay, that's a key clue for us not to actually be learned. At any
totally
point.
Totally plot convenience playhouse.
Yeah, but it's not the point. Anyway, they go to the hotel, the motel, and Magnum says, no, I can't break in. That would be against the law, which is just a setup for later where he breaks in somewhere and says, "Look, not when the class is around, not when class is in session." But they do decide to buy all the trash from the garbage truck. They pay him $20 to take all the trash. They load the trash up in the van of Shaggy. And now we have to stop to say that there's one of the kids in the class, one of the people in the class, is a young surfer dude. They're trying to do young surfer dude. But you may know him as the writer and director of Ace Ventura Pet Detective, Tom Shadyac.
And the Nutty Professor.
And the Nutty Professor, yeah. Sure.
He's had quite a decent career behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. He only has three acting parts, and this is one of them. Whoa.
His last name
there's garbage in my van, man. Dude.
I should have told you that I need new tires.
Yeah.
Very good.
I will say, he has amazingly large eyes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so anyway, the van's not built for a car chase, though. That's not...
No.
That's not
a Ferrari.
But they do have the car chase happen in the van when it's full of garbage, which I think is hilarious also. And but it's not up to it. And then they take all the garbage back to the class, and that's when, of course, the guy, as the synopsis says, the guy came in and canceled the class. But it's full of garbage.
Alan Fudge.
Full of garbage.
Yes. Now, the classroom is like his mother's classroom or his wife's classroom?
His wife's classroom.
Right.
Yes, his wife's class, who was
so Magnum's,
canceled,
canceled
to make room for,
Magnum's class, which is why the dean has it in for Magnum, because Magnum has a friend who works at the school who is never seen.
No.
And I will say, that whole relationship and sequence is very true to life at a college campus.
I believe
What have you done to Mildred's room?
We'll clean it up. It's fine. And actually,
and then he steps in goo on his way.
Yeah, he does. Take that, Dean.
That's the in your face, Dean.
That's right. That's right. And they find clues. They find clues in the trash. They find receipts for bank transfers and like there are clues, which is the beauty of this. Is Magnum is sort of like teaching them how to do detective work by sorting through garbage, which is not glamorous, but it could get the job done when a lady doesn't tell you that he's staying at a particular motel in this particular room. This is the hard work of being a PI. All right, back to the synopsis. Mag takes up the lady's case. They take pictures at the bank of a deal between the VP of the bank that the man, Ted, works at, and another guy. Then they go to an insurance place, and Mag and Stacy, the lady, get caught by two treasury men. Mag gets everybody to catch the two treasury men at the King Kamehameha Club.
Okay.
End of synopsis.
Yep. Okay.
What else? I don't know. I didn't take notes. What else happened?
Really, that was sort of an abrupt act three, I got to tell you.
There's a whole lot of men and yeah.
So I have.
Oh, and the guy. The guy.
Yeah.
I forgot the guy.
Well, The act three, which is rather sparsely dealt with in those notes.
Maybe mom came in.
It's a mom! I'm watching
PBS!
Turn on this old house right now. Pop Villa's retrofitting a basement. Okay, mom! Busted!
Zoinks!
So the way that they set up the treasury men, who are treasury men gone bad, is they're going to meet with Magnum, in which he's going to show them hand over the incriminating stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, Magnum knows that they're going to double cross.
Right. So he's like, oh, well,
force him to get him.
It's all fine. We might as well just go, lady. We don't need to be here anymore. They'll take care of it from here. And it's very much like he's just getting out of there because he knows that there's something shady going on with the guys from the treasury.
But at the King Kamehameha Club, there is a whole series of our Scooby gang coming in their various disguises.
Yes.
Where you have the journalism student as a hooker, and the old lady selling flowers, and the old man driving up behind them and blocking their egress. And then Merle, like an angel appears and punches
a guy
in the face.
Well, it's not just that he's trying to get out. He's trying to get the safe deposit box key that's lying by the dead body.
Yeah, yeah.
That nobody else has noticed.
Yes.
That is an earlier scene, but it's
he's
there's a lot of
that.
That's when
there's
they
a lot of shenanigans.
The treasury guys find them, and there's a dead body in the hotel room,
right?
Motel room.
And I will say, it's in the guy's office.
Oh, you're right.
I will say, even before that, where they start to figure out the plot of what happened. They do a very nice job explaining the whole financial chicanery and the exemptions and Higgins. They use Higgins really well to explain this as we just transition into watching them staking out the bank. And, you know, it was a very efficient way of explaining something that is very abstruse, and they didn't even need to explain it in that much detail because it's an 80s PI.
It kind of doesn't matter because it's a wacky Scooby-Doo episode of an 80s PI show.
So they
do make an effort to make it a little bit just sort of like to let you explain because it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. In the end, in fact, something also not covered in the synopsis. It's okay, Brian. You were young.
You were 12. It's fine.
Is one of the best things about this episode is the final scene, where they're back, and now the class is packed because word has gotten around that there's like actual crimes being solved in this class. But it's not that long because Magnum still got kind of like his thing from being punched and all that. But the lady and her fiance, they're going to go off and get married and go on their, or they got married and they're going to go on their honeymoon, something like that. It's the mega happy ending.
Yes. And they got a reward, so it's going to be
right.
A big
and then
honeymoon.
Rick and TC take most of the reward from Magnum because Magnum gets a share of it because he helped them. And they do that for a while in their typical sort of really helped. And
we did all the work. Yeah. TC, again, redeeming himself from previous episodes where he said unfortunate things, really does well here because he in class is asking, Magnum, do you often, Mr. Magnum, do you often have people help you out on cases?
Yep.
And Larry Minetti, too, is doing the, perhaps someone, do you have an inside street man to ask the underworld boss? It's great. And they do a lot of that in the final segment as they're relieving Thomas of his money.
And then everybody begins to ask questions about what happened in the episode. And I was recounting this to my family tonight at dinner. I was like, the best part of this episode is at the end where everybody's got a question about, like, who is that guy? And why did he use his name? And it's literally like the writers of the show wrote down all of the questions they had about this dumb plot. And they just put them in the episode. And Magnum's like, I don't know, the end.
I have a feeling.
I have a feeling that it's Roger's Turrentine after he's had his brainstorm to blend Scooby-Doo with Magnum P.I. He takes his script to the other writers and says, well, fellas, what do you think? And he's pelted with questions.
Yeah.
And
why does that guy use his real name? Who was that other guy? And what was his part in all of this?
It's just him sitting in the room. I'm going to have idiots ask your questions. And Magnum stare angrily at the camera. There, take that, assholes. And then that's the end of the show.
I have written down here. I love that for once Rick and TC each get paid.
Yes.
Because... Uh-huh. That's the running thing. And then they don't just hang lanterns. This is a room full of lanterns.
Yes.
Like every possible inconsistency or question. And it's great because, like, even going back to like the big sleep, someone asked Raymond Chandler, who killed this guy? And he goes, I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the greatest PI novels of all.
Yeah,
no one has any idea how it works.
And some of the answers are really not interesting, right? Which is like, why did he go by his real name? Because he did. That happens sometimes. What was this guy's deal? Well, it wasn't that interesting, so why are we talking about it, right? But you can definitely pile them all up, and so I just love that they all come out, and you just have enough time to be like, what was it at the end? It's over, right? Like, it's a great moment. It's a great moment, and again, I'm very sad that we didn't get Murder 201 and Further Adventures of the Scooby Gang, because... It's not your usual Magnum PI episode, but it was hilarious. And it's like a little supporting cast, a little ensemble of Magnum's crime busters. And I'm sorry we didn't get to see more.
I would have loved if the angry journalism student who's always needling Magnum, she would have been a great foil.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Magnum needs a foil.
Yeah, she could have come back and be like, Magnum, I got this case or I've been threatened or something, and then they gotta investigate something at the university.
The old man librarian who likes to look things up. He'd be fun.
He could have used him as a research assistant, right? Like
totally.
There could have been a whole other episode where he's like, I got this one covered, and he goes to all of his little helpers and they help him solve a crime. Like, it's right there.
And it's like, for once he doesn't have to go to Rick and TC, and they're like, hey, wait, you used to come to us, and they get jealous.
Yeah.
Right.
So a quick IMDb research. Roger's Turrentine wrote 4 episodes of Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
This was his last. This was his review.
I had
Take
enough.
That, Belisario.
Well, speaking of IMDb, I went and looked because I recognized the name Harry Towns, and I'm like, why do I know that name? And this was one of his last roles, but he had been active from like the early 50s onward. He was in everything as a guest star. He was in all the 60s TV shows. He was also a guest in The Islanders and The Hawaiians.
Mm.
But some of our incomparable listeners might know him as one of the people on the planet in The Return of the Archons on Star Trek.
Ah, nice.
That's why he might look familiar. He also was... A fellow Hulk in The Incredible Hulk.
Roger's Turrentine's filmography is not particularly large, but he wrote 7 episodes of Hunter, a very dumb show. starring Fred Dreyer. But he also wrote two episodes of I'll Fly Away, an episode of Northern Exposure, an episode of Homicide: Life on the Street.
Wow.
So, you know, some good credit.
He can write good stuff.
A couple Cagney and Lacey's, a Brett Maverick, and two episodes of BJ and the Bear. So, yeah, I mean,
the market quality. About the Simon and Simon episode.
Yeah, get him back here.
I mean, if you look at the progression, you know, they're the jobs that you take for the money and to get in, and then you get to the point where you get to write the good stuff.
Yep. But anyway, this is good. This is a fun, silly, fun episode. And my biggest criticism of it is essentially I wish they did more with these characters because it's ridiculous and great. And the van is like a star. That van is about to come apart. And in fact, at one point, a hubcap flies off.
Yep.
And then as Magnum Dash Mania points out, it comes back. Flub.
Yeah. It is the first chase scene where like a billow of smoke is following the van.
Oh, the comedy smoke trail from that van is amazing too.
It's so good. And in the bar scene, the scene where Magnum and the bartender are talking.
Oh yeah.
And first of all, I was like, I know that guy. And the more I watched, it was like, oh, that's Truck from the last season of 5-0, the original 5-0. And Mo Kiali.
And he tells Magnum that he's using a plot from an old movie. And he's like, oh, I haven't seen that one.
He's like, Magnum goes, did you know so-and-so? I'm trying to find so-and-so. I owe him money. And he goes,
I
saw that on the late movie. It was a Dane Clark movie. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Dane Clark. Who makes Dane Clark references?
The reason I like this episode, I think, besides the fact that it has an adorable cast of little helper mates, and I can't tell you how I squealed with joy when Merle appeared to punch the guy.
Oh, man.
Merle!
Yeah. That's Chekhov's.
Yeah, you didn't expect
Chekhov's
that.
Merle, no. Right?
That was such a great surprise.
Yeah, because he storms off earlier in the episode, and you go, well, we'll
never see Merle again. Nope.
Wrong.
He withdrew from the class, and Mr. Gaylord made an exception to the rules to cancel the class as a result.
Yeah. This was literally the Merle scene to me had more impact than the scene in Dead Poets Society where they all stand on the desks. Because
oh, God. Well, most things do. I hate Dead Poets Society.
Oh,
anyway.
I hate that movie so much.
Thank you.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Yes. Wow. Yes.
Oh, man.
That's a whole other segment.
Yeah.
That's a new segment called Die, Dead Poets Society, Die.
Dead Poets Society, good.
Dead to me.
The two things that Magnum wants most in the world are to watch a Detroit Tigers game and to have people recognize him as a great detective with knowledge to pass on.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's always saying, well, one day I'm going to write a book, or, oh, I'm going to win that big award and all my friends will be there to celebrate with me. And, this one, it's I'm going to become the teacher and bestow my knowledge onto other people. And as so many things happen, he is thwarted at every turn, and it's delightful. Magnum can never know true joy and must merely recognize the fun of living for free in a millionaire's beachside mansion.
And again, Rogers must have had just great fun writing this. In this episode, he literally shovels a ton of manure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Off screen.
That's amazing.
He does.
Yep. I think the script was a cry for help, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now going back to the recurring segment of trying to figure out the timeline.
Yes.
In one scene, we do get a screenshot of Magnum's driver's license or investigator's license.
His ID, I think it is.
One of them. And it has his date of birth. His date of birth is 1/5/46. The episode aired 11/15/1984. The episode 40, where he turns 40, appeared in February of 1987.
Mm-hmm.
So he should have been 41.
No. Oh.
What the hell? Anyway, that's it.
More grist for the mill.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering maybe if it's one of those, maybe that episode should have started 1 year earlier in Honolulu.
All right. I have a couple of letters.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah. Bring them on.
Leaving aside the letter that was also a synopsis, I have a couple more letters.
Yes.
First one is from listener Larry, who writes,
"Hi, Larry."
Who writes, "Oh my God, Magnum podcast." I've been enjoying the podcast, and please keep it going for as long as it amuses you. But the notion of you three doing an Elvis movie podcast, well, I would follow that dream wherever that dream may lead. The song of the shrimp awaits. Come out of your shells. Infinity and jelly donuts, Larry. So another vote for Phil. I do think Phil, I don't know about the rest of us, but Phil, it is your destiny to do a podcast about Elvis movies eventually.
I think it probably is.
It probably is.
Oh, I'm so
I've been listening to Phil talk about Elvis movies for the better part of 25 years, so it's time. Mm-hmm.
I grew up watching all of them. I haven't seen most of them in a while, so it'd be nice to read.
They hold up great. Flawless. And, as you remember them.
All right. Well, that's the sequel when we're done with this, as the Elvis podcast rolls out. One more letter. This is from Eric, listener Eric. He says, gentlemen, I wasn't sure if this was a topic for a family-friendly podcast like yours, but recent swearing, have you heard this episode?
Yeah.
And your new segment, Are We Watching a Porno, allayed these fears. I thought that you might be interested to know that in the same month that Morgan Fairchild was running cons on Magnum and Simon & Simon, Bob Guccione had her running an even more egregious con. Namely, in this viewer's mind, a bait and switch in his magazine. Despite the promise of the cover of October 1982's Penthouse magazine, the actual photo layout inside appears to be a misplaced JCPenney catalog shoot featuring none other than Paunch, Eric Estrada, as her co-model.
There he is!
I've attached scanned photos, and boy, did Eric ever... For you. Initially, I had concerns about your willingness to discuss photos that your listeners can't see, but recent segments such as Professionalism and Into the Mouth of Magnum have allayed those fears entirely. Despite your promise to read every letter you receive, it's possible this may have run a bit long. However, if time runs short, perhaps you can skip Phil's new segment, I List Every Elvis Movie I Can Think Of.
What?
Woo. Keep up the good work,
wow.
Eric, devoted listener.
Wow. I guess this segment is called We Did This to Ourselves, huh, Eric? Jeez.
Just for
okay.
that.
So now all is forgiven with Eric. You know why? Because these photos of Morgan Fairchild and Eric Estrada in Penthouse are amazing. Calling it a JCPenney catalog shoot, eerily accurate. I would say a little more Sears, but either way, they are... Sure. For a photo shoot where the model is on the cover of Penthouse...
Yeah,
it is the most ludicrously tame.
Yeah,
dear,
one might say,
dear Penthouse Forum. I never thought it would happen to me. I bought this magazine.
I got the Sears Wish Book, and Morgan Fairchild was in it.
Now read that in Crazy Cat's voice. Cool Cat. Sorry.
Or Cool Cat.
Not Crazy Cat.
Oh, Cool Cat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
lemonade.
I got scared and became confused. That's
I
what.
I got scared and became confused and posted a sweater.
So it is absolutely true.
Enrolled in a small Midwestern college.
On the cover of Penthouse, Morgan Fairchild is looking her blonde vixen best, promising untold scanty photos inside. And in fact, she is sweatered up. And just like visiting a furniture showroom with Eric Estrada. That's what it is.
All I will say, Eric, go find the movie The Seduction. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
can you do an imitation of Eric Estrada searching for a chaise lounge at the furniture store? There's my chaise!
There it is!
I need a chaise! There it is!
Yep, that's it.
Oh, Eric Estrada.
Wow.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Dead Poets Society. Oh,
so
man.
Yes.
Dead Poets
yes.
Society.
Tell me about Dead Poets Society. Why? Well, I've only seen it one time. Is it maudlin?
Well, yeah, it's maudlin. It has, frankly, it's a handling of teenage suicide is appalling.
It's horrifying.
Yeah,
and the idea that this is an inspirational teacher, he's a terrible teacher.
Terrible.
Oh my God!
No, he's the worst teacher ever.
And you know, basically, he drives them all to break out of their cocoons. You know, do all these things without giving them the tools to do it properly or effectively, and then winds up with a teenager committing suicide and goes, "Oh well, I guess I have to leave the school now." That's it.
Yep.
What?
Yeah.
No. You've screwed over all of these kids by giving them
Well, if you have a different opinion about Dead Poets Society, don't write in.
No,
not
because right into the Dead Poets Society podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll watch New Magnum before we discuss.
Oh man,
Dead Poets Society.
Oh sure, yeah.
Right? Because that's at least fun.
I saw it twice because I saw it the first time on my own. Well, that wasn't very good. And then there was a girl because it came out when I was 18.
Yeah,
and the girl says, "Oh, let's go see Dead Poets Society." And I said, "Okay." And I went to go see it. And we came out of the movie and she said, "Oh, that was great. What do you think?" And let me tell you, fellas, I want to talk to the kids out there. I'm going to turn around my chair right now, flip around.
New segment,
cap.
Phil raps at you.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey kids, hey fellas. If you want to impress the ladies, film criticism is not the way to do it. They do not want to hear that the thing they just liked is terrible and jejune. They don't want that. So don't do that.
Don't do that.
Thanks, kids.
I have a similar story because I saw it opening weekend with two male friends, one of whom had wisdom teeth out that day.
Oh boy!
So this was, you know, hey, let's take his mind off it and watch the new Robin Williams movie. That'll be great. And then we then proceeded to the one friend and I argued about the movie for about 2 hours afterwards.
Oh,
and the
Sounds
poor
like
guy
fun.
With the wisdom teeth out was just, you know, sitting there. And finally, we said, "What did you think?" He goes,
"It was good."
And that was the end of the discussion. 2 weeks later,
you saw it with Droopy Dog.
Yeah, oh, it was. That is a dead on impression.
Thank you. It was good.
And oh, that's going to be in my head for a while.
Droopy Dog at the movies. Why didn't he replace Siskel? Damn it.
Yeah.
And so 2 weeks later, you know, I'm trying to figure out a movie with a girl, and she says, "How about Dead Poets Society?" And I went, Nope. And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you.
But at least I didn't have to see it again.
At least you didn't have to see it again.
That's right.
And reach the same result. So
I was just like, no, dodge that bullet.
And it brings us to the end of this segment of Magnum Podcast, Dead Poets Society, You're Dead to Me.
It's academia. It's thematic.
And the end of this episode of Magnum Podcast. No Legos again.
There'll be
in the podcast, but they're not. We're not going to talk about them because they don't exist yet. Any last words before we sign off?
I really am curious about ocean hydrodynamics.
Sure.
I also saw Ghost in the theaters because of a girl.
Oh. How many things did you see because of a girl?
It basically a lot of bad movies between 1988 and 1994, friend.
And this has been Magnum Podcast. I've been Jason Snell. They've been David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Bye, guys.
Politics of the Vatican, 1919 to 1933. I'm in.
Bummer.
Wow. Radical.
Dude.